Again. Hello, and a warm welcome to the Reform Party podcast. Today I've got Mr. David Burgess-Joyce, who has been on before, but in case you didn't see that, I'm going to ask him to introduce himself. David.
Good morning, Ken. David Burgess-Joyce, currently the interim chair for Reform UK Wirral, one of the many associations that have been set up by Nigel and Zia to try and make sense of local councils. It's a hard job.
And tell me, you've been doing this now for what, 6 months, 9 months?
about 9 months, I think, yeah, in fairness, yeah.
And what are the rewards that you've had from doing it?
To be honest, it's a full-time job, I have to say. It does take up an awful lot of time, but in fairness, Ken, it's valuable time that you and I are prepared to, let's be honest, give. The fact is that the council on the Wirral, probably like most councils, is nearly bankrupt, and it is quite rewarding to be able to put in place a number of potential candidates. Who will fight the good fight once we are controlling Wirral Council in a couple of years' time when the next elections are on. And in fairness, it's quite rewarding that you can set something up from scratch that looks workable, unlike my days in the Conservative Party when you had tablets of stone that were sent from CCHQ and you had no choice in how that was interpreted. At least here we have a collegiate approach on how things are pushed forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's unusual to be able to have something which effectively you own, don't you? You have started been in it right from the start. You've been able to move things in the directions you want to. And in terms of rewards, I mean, it seems to me that one of the biggest rewards is the new and fantastic people that we've met.
Yeah, I mean, we've been holding public meetings, as you know. When I say public, obviously public to people who are activists within the Wirral. Now, the current numbers on the Wirral, not betraying any confidences, we have over 2,400 activists who are registered on the system.
And tell me, David, how would that compare with the, when you've got some knowledge of the Tory party in the past, how would that compare with the sort of branches that the Conservatives have on Wirral?
Well, the Conservatives, surprisingly, Ken, haven't got as many as you think. The biggest area would probably be Wirral West, where they probably, at the last count, had about 600 members. I think that number is significantly reduced, but I couldn't tell you exactly how many. Wallasey has a couple of hundred people who are interested, and Birkenhead has virtually no membership. That's just by the nature of the fact that Birkenhead is not really a Conservative heartland.
Right. So, as I say, it's different and unusual to be able to have effectively created something from the ground up. What challenges has that brought?
When we first started, as you know, we did have meetings, and those meetings started off with reasonable numbers of people. It then became, as you probably noticed, a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago, possibly, we had meetings whereby they were packed to the rafters. And in fairness, you very kindly sorted us out with our first venue, which woefully probably would not allow the numbers of people that we want to come now without breaking fire regulations. So, in fairness, we have for next week a much bigger venue, which hopefully will excite people because it's a really nice venue on the Wirral, but we'll hold certainly a couple of hundred people, which I think is probably the kind of numbers that we're expecting. So, the beauty of setting it up, and you've been there and you understand how it worked. These people are passionate. They're not red, they're not blue, they're not yellow, they're actually just patriots. And they may have voted Labour or Conservative in the past, some of them voted Liberal, but they've realised, as we all have, that those parties no longer represent the British people. They represent themselves. And so as a result, that translates into local politics just as it does at the national stage. And I know you and I and others who are managing this process have met some truly awe-inspiring people. And many of these people have put their names forward to be councillors. They've had no experience in politics in the past. They may never have even been a member of a political party in the past, but they've suddenly realised that for their children and their children's children, they need to step up to the plate. And it's been very heartwarming. And I know you feel the same, that these people are just great people.
Yeah, I mean, we've found people, haven't we, from all sorts of different, as you say, walks of life, but all sorts of different experiences. We've got some people who, for example, on the IT side are so clued up, way beyond anything that we could hope to.
No, I think you make a valid point there, Ken. I mean, we've met some people recently. We couldn't afford them. We really could not afford these people, but they're giving their services free of time because they just feel the same kind of passion that our country is going down the drain. And it's a self-inflicted wound. You know, we're doing this to ourselves. No one's invading us. We are allowing the invasion of our country, the denigration of our history and our traditions. And unfortunately, most people in this country now who are taxpayers, who've contributed over the years, can see nothing for the money that they pay. You don't mind paying taxes. I think the British are very good at paying taxes if they can see something for their money. They're now seeing I'm paying far more taxes and getting far less for my money. And there comes a point when the British people will crack. And at the moment, the thing that's stopping them from cracking is the hope that reform will take power in a few years' time. And God, let's hope that happens, Ken.
You, in your position as branch chair, you are effectively the link between the grassroots, what's going on the ground, all all our supporters and activists, and our head office. Do you find that the challenges come more from the head office end or from I don't want to get you in any trouble, David.
That's a good question, Ken. No, I think in fairness, he says, sitting on the fence firmly, it comes from both. People are very passionate and they have particular totemic things that they want to see done. I agree with most of what they say, but we have to be cautious that we don't look like we're just a rabble. We look like we're an organized group of people who are sensible, who are committed to changing the way this country is run. And I think that is probably most of us. Some of us may want to do that in a more collegiate style. Others may want to get the torches and pitchforks out and storm the town hall. I understand both sides, but in order to get into power, we need to be seen as the adults in the room. And so occasionally you do have to sort of keep people content, but not doing anything silly. Equally so, I would be mortified if headquarters turned into the Conservative central headquarters, which was you will do this whether you like it or not. It may not fit with your particular area, but you're going to do it anyway. I haven't found that yet, but I do think many of the chairs.
I like the yet, David.
Well,
Do you see it as
unfortunately,
inevitable?
yeah. Well, I think unfortunately it happens with all central bodies that they end up being a little bit authoritarian. They don't mean to be, and I don't think reform does, but I think there are enough people who think like us, who are chairs, etc., who are running the associations, that we can keep a bit of control on that. That there needs to be a little bit of trust in each of the areas. So what happens in Wirral wouldn't necessarily fit in Tatton or Trafford or wherever. And so there has to be some latitude given by headquarters to the people who are running the associations that may not necessarily fit comfortably with our particular area. And I think the same applies. What used to happen, to give you an example, was the Conservative Party, and forgive me to use that example, but I do know the Conservative Party, they would literally drop somebody in. This is your councillor, this is your MP candidate, like it or lo loathe it. Well, hang on, he doesn't even live here. He lives 200 miles away, which is what happened at Wallasey at the last election. They dropped somebody in who lived in Chatham in Kent. As a result, he didn't get in. He came third. We came second, Labour came first. That cannot be allowed to happen with reform. And I don't think it will happen, in fairness, because I do think reform have realised the mistakes that both Labour and Conservative have made in the past by just this is the way it'll be, like it or lump it.
Well, let's hope so. But I mean, in a sense, the history of reform is the opposite, because reform began as a very top-down structured organization. And we all understand the reasons why, and going into the background of Nigel with UKIP and all these things, why it was that he set it up in that manner. But at some point, it has to pivot and it has to start to almost not lose the all control from the top, but the bits down the bottom have to start and come up and start to influence the organization from the ground up. And
And I think you are spot on. I do think I understand why it started the way it did, because ultimately, what you can't one of the biggest threats I think we have is entryism. So that's effectively where other parties will try and get into us, either to vote people in, vote people out, and cause dissent and major problems. Now, to give you another example, when Jeremy Corbyn was running to be leader of the Labour Party, large swathes of Conservative members joined the Labour Party. I know that for a fact. They joined the Labour Party in order to vote Jeremy Corbyn in because they knew he was unelectable. So that will happen with us. And it's already happened with us. And I obviously won't mention names, but there were two individuals that I had to get rid of before the last general election because I knew that they were Conservative entryists. They were in to cause problems and dissent into my campaign. So I got rid of them. And we need to be mindful of that fact all of the time that not everybody who sits in front of us at a public meeting has reform's best interests at heart.
Well, we can't be too hard on head office or whatever, because the fact is that we're doing fantastic, aren't we? I mean, you look at those election results from a couple of weeks back, and I'm still sort of bathing in the warm glow from it, because they were absolutely fantastic, weren't they?
They were phenomenal. I have to say, Ken, I'm probably a cup half full most of the time, but even I thought those election results were outstanding. And if you think that, and again, this is something I didn't realise, and I sort of live politics all day long, is that we had full control of 10 councils, but we're the largest party in four more. I must confess, I didn't know that. And that proves the point that it wasn't just a close run thing. You know, we actually had two mayoralties that we were very close to winning. And as a result, I think had the government not done the dirty on us, which was to stop 5.5 million people having the opportunity to vote, and then you add in things like the fact that Wirral has all outs and doesn't have any local elections until another 2 years, if you think all things being equal, we would have decimated the two main parties, absolutely decimated them a couple of weeks ago. And they are seriously terrified, Ken, seriously terrified of reform. I know that from just the local Labour Party and some of the people I've spoken to there. They really see us on the march and they don't see us as being stoppable, which I think is quite comforting to know that. The Labour Party on the Wirral doesn't think we are stoppable as an entity. And so they will do everything in their power, along with their friends in the Conservative group, because they are, let's be honest, the uni party, both nationally and locally. They will do any dirty trick that they can find. They will get the local press on their side. And so we have to be mindful of that because they will be coming after us. Ken, I make no apologies for saying that kind of language. They will be coming after us big and proper. So next year, once the campaign starts to gear up for, you know, you try and give yourself a year of a run up to a campaign. So in May 2027, those are when the elections will start. It will start to get uncomfortable next year. And after Christmas 2026, it will be horrific because they will see their gravy train coming to a halt because that's what it is. It's a gravy train. We saw that last night at the full council that they are literally there for their own enjoyment. They're not there for the benefit of the people of Wirral. They are there for themselves in order to get aggrandisement, to get large swathes of money, because we know that some of these chairmanships bring significant amounts of additional money to them. It was quite unedifying to watch last night. I'm sure you'll agree, Ken, because we were both there. It's quite unedifying to watch these people fighting like rats in a sack over who can get what chairmanship and how much money that particular chairmanship pays. It's
Yeah,
appalling to
I
watch
mean,
it happen.
I hadn't realized that these allowances and so on made such, were such a big factor in local, but I thought people were in it for from altruistic reasons. But it became clear last night that it was all about the money.
Well, you only have to go on the Wirral website, and it's well hidden. But I'll probably give the link to the team later on. But there is a full link on there as to how much each individual councillor claims per year. Now, every councillor is entitled to 10,000, and I think it's £10,050 a year for being a councillor. I don't actually have an objection to that, because you do spend an awful lot of your own time and money in order to be a councillor. You know, just travelling thousands of miles a year on council business. You know, I think it's fair. But what I do have a problem with is that the chairmanships of some committees pay significant amounts of money. So, give you an example, it's about £9,000 extra just to attend half a dozen meetings of the fire authority. It's about £7,000 or £8,000 a year extra just to go onto the Mersey Travel Committee. And so, of course, they all jockey for position to see who can be the favourite to be given those particular chairmanships. You don't actually have to have any skills, Ken, in that particular field. But if you're the chosen one this year and you've kept your nose clean with the leader of that group, he or she will give you that chairmanship, and it keeps you on side, a little reward. For being a good solid supporter. And you see that particularly in the Labour Party, where they effectively give each councillor some additional money every year. So it's your turn this year to go on that committee. It'll be my turn next year. So we're getting lots of, you know, supporters for our cause. And in the Conservative group, I know for a fact the same people get the same committees year in and year out. And it's a nice little earner, Ken, because you can get money for being the leader of a group, the deputy leader of a group, the chairman of a particular committee, attendee on another committee. So you can actually have some councillors earning more money than the average wage that's paid to people who are doing a 40-hour-a-week job on the Wirral. It's appalling. And that they've got nothing to show for it at the end. So you'll understand that I get angry about it, but in my 8 years as a councillor, I never once had a committee chair. Not once. Because I didn't toe the line. I didn't do the right things. I didn't, you know, make sure that the leader of the
Well,
group was suitably stroked.
all of that is to your credit, David.
Thank you, mate. Cheers, mate. Thank you. I'm proud of that fact.
I mean, I'm convinced, having seen the results in the rest of the country, had we had elections in Wirral 2 weeks ago, I'm convinced we would certainly have got a large number of councillors in there, if not having the controlling interest.
I think we need 34 councillors to actually hold the balance of power. The 66 councillors, for those of you watching who don't know, there are 22 wards. There are three councillors in each ward, so 66 councillors in total. Currently, that is split into the Labour Group, which is the largest. You've got 14 Conservative, 14 Greens, six Liberal, and three Independent Conservatives, which happened literally this week because they are unhappy with the leadership within the Conservative Group. And as a result, I think you're spot on. We would have won, I think, significant numbers to control the council. Because the beauty, and I know you will have experienced it as well, and I've had to come to terms with it, we cut across all parties. We have got as much of a chance of getting elected in Rock Ferry and Bidston as we have in West Kirby and Heswell. Because the people there, whether you are a Conservative patriot or a Labour patriot, you just see that this is no longer about tribal politics. This is about saving your country and locally saving the council, which has been badly run for years. And even though the Labour Party doesn't have overall control on the Wirral, it still controls everything because it's the largest party. And as we don't have an opposition on the Wirral because the Conservatives are complicit with the Labour Party, unfortunately, nothing's going to change, Ken,
It's like the
until
same
we
thing
get in.
as happens on a national level. You have the uniparty within the council. It is a uniparty, and the only thing that seems to threaten them at the moment are the Green Party, and they can easily see that off. It will be a different matter once we get there.
Yeah, I mean, if you think now, if you were an ex-Conservative voter, you're going to vote Reform because they look like the Conservative Party as was. But you think to yourself, well, hang on, well, why would ex-Labour voters do that? Well, because the Labour voter on the Wirral now realises that the Labour Party doesn't represent them. It hasn't represented them for a long time. It's not remotely interested in the working person. Not remotely interested. It's interested in middle class, liberal, university educated, woke people. That's all it's interested. The North London dinner parties, those are the people who vote for the Labour Party now. I mean, what a transformation from what Keir Hardie did years ago. I mean, it's ridiculous. But unfortunately, the Labour Party has brought it upon himself. After 1997, they had effectively Tony Blair, who tried to destroy much of the institutions of this country. You then had David Cameron in 2010, who was not a conservative in any way, shape, or form. He got into bed with the Liberals because he was very comfortable getting into bed with the Liberals. And as a result, that Liberal entity has remained within the Conservative Party. And you can see that with all of the many leaders of the Conservative Party that we've had since 2010. And so it's been hollowed out. There are no conservative-minded people. I don't mean conservative as in party. I mean conservative-minded people until now. And suddenly, we've got people, whether they be Labour or ex-conservative, who realise there is only one party that you can vote for if you want change. If you want the status quo, then carry on voting the way you've always voted for years and years, and you'll always get what you've always had. But if you want to save your country from the decimation that's been caused, let's be honest, primarily by the Conservative Party, because they were in power for 14 years, Labour's only carrying on the devastation, then you need to vote Reform. And if you think it doesn't matter to you, you're getting on in life, well, maybe if you don't care about yourself, care about your kids and your grandkids, because they're the people who will have to clear up the mess that you've left if you don't vote Reform. That's how strongly I feel about it, Ken.
I mean, when I said that I suspected had we had elections 2 weeks ago that we would have won, I don't think there's any doubt at all with all the work that we are going to be doing over the next 2 years. And by the time we get to May 2027, I'm certain we will have a controlling influence in the council and Wirral. Now, then comes the question, once we've got that control, what do we do with it? Because it's all very well having a plan to become elected and to get power, but you then have to decide how you what you use it for. And I'm not certain that some of the things that we've talked about in councils that have been talked about are going to be just as straightforward as perhaps we imagine they will be.
No, you're quite right. I mean, getting elected is difficult enough, but once you're in power, what you don't want to be is a one-term pony, in effect. And that would be the worst thing that could possibly happen for Reform, is that people put their faith in you. You do 4 years or 5 years as a national government, and then people go, well, it just didn't work. It was a good experiment while it lasted, but we'll go back to Conservative or Labour or whatever, and we'll end up in that vicious cycle. So what the party is very, very keen on doing is making sure that there's not just those people in power in a local council, so the leader and the deputy leader of a particular council being a Reform councillor, they're bringing in expertise from outside. So they are changing the dynamics within a council. And long may that continue, because councils are, by their very nature, institutionally corrupt. That is a fact. They are institutionally corrupt in the way that they run their business. So we will be looking at how long some contracts are. There's an awful lot of long contracts,
Yeah,
which
yeah,
are
yeah.
never healthy. And not only are, I mean, you've done contracts in your business life, Ken. Many of these contracts are long and have no review sessions in them. I mean, that's quite weird in business, isn't it? Not to have some sort of annual review and is it working for both parties, etc. You then tend to sort of think bad thoughts that maybe these aren't possibly legitimate
And
contracts.
they may even have been written without any break clause in them.
Absolutely correct. And in fact, I do know one particular one which I can't mention on here, but I do know for a fact that that one is being investigated because a whistleblower came forward. So I've got to be a bit careful on that one, Ken, because it's mid investigation. But that's got to be one of the first things we need to lay out on the table on day one, what it is that the council currently has and is basically sucked into with regards to contracts. We then also need to look at who does what. You know, the council has thousands of employees. We need to know what they're doing, where they're doing it, how well they're doing it. I mean, to give you an example, and a little bugbear of mine when I was a councillor, they used to say that the annual reviews every year, they'd done about 75%. But they said that every year. So I used to ask the question, well, what about the 25% that you haven't reviewed? And how can you give them a pay rise if you haven't reviewed them? Well, we can't get them into the office. And I have to say, I always had a niggling doubt that maybe these people didn't actually exist. But that's a separate issue. But these are the kind of things that we need to be looking at day one. So, in answer to your question, we need to see where the bodies are buried. There is a lot of procurement, and I know you've had some ideas on this. There's a lot of procurement that goes on that the council actually shouldn't be doing. So, we need to sort of actually look at what the core business that the council should. So, the statutory stuff we have to do by law. Obviously, that's not an issue. But it doesn't mean to say you can't look at how we do it. As long as the end result is the same, how we do it is down to us as the council.
Yeah, but when I said that we might not easily be able to do all the things we would like to, that example that you just gave of employees working from home is one, for example, whereby we might want to say from now on, no council employees work from home. You all come into the office, blah blah blah, and then they'll say, yeah, but there's a custom and practice whereby you can't do that, and you then run into problems in terms of personnel. Similarly, if you we want to say we want to get rid of all the DEI within the council, we'll find it difficult to do that because the Employment Act was written in such a way that its tentacles go into every council, every organisation that's involved with. So similarly, with climate change, it's the same thing. You know, the Climate Act will insist that we give people training on the climate emergency. So it's not what I'm saying is it's you know we will be able to achieve things, but it's not won't be as straightforward as perhaps we imagine.
No, and in fairness, Ken, it's not going to be easy. But you have to start somewhere. And one of the things about controlling more and more councils with reform is that eventually you will be able to sort of manage upwards because there is no obligation on a councillor to attend any training courses. And I certainly refused to attend DEI courses when I was offered them. I believe in treating everybody fairly. That's all I need to know. You treat people fairly. Treat them with decency. That's all you need to know. You don't need a course on it. That's just a Judeo-Christian way of doing business, isn't it? You treat everyone as a human being. So these ideas that you can't change anything from council level, they need to be challenged, and we will challenge them. And that's happening in the 10 councils that we currently control. So in order to get a lot of what we're talking about is there will be an occasion, Ken, when we're in control of the council, where there will be three types of employee. There'll be those who will be on board with what we're trying to do. There are those that will want to try and be on board and we'll help them. And there are those that won't be working for the council anymore. Do you think that might actually have the effect that we need to
Well,
change things?
I certainly hope so because the driver has got to be to get rid of the wasteful spending, the wasteful wastes of money that's going on. If we could do that, we would get the public on side and they would realize that, you know, we were on their side.
The problem with the council is, over the years, it's felt like it's a property developer. So it's bought up large swathes of Birkenhead. I'm sure that's nothing to do with gerrymandering, in order to do something with those particular. So the View Cinema, the Pyramids Shopping Centre. Now, if anyone's been to those things, you'll know that they are fairly run down and are not worth what the council paid for them in the first place. And yet we now have these. The Pyramids, as an example, they paid a certain amount of money for it from a pension fund. It's now not worth what they paid for it, and they've now got a £3 million bill for new fire doors, basically putting lipstick on a pig, because, as we know, the Pyramids is half empty because no one wants to pay the rents to shop there. And so, unfortunately, Birkenhead, which is where the council wanted it to be a destination, and I'll give you the analogy at the meeting that I was in on regeneration. They wanted people from, say, the west of Wirral to get on the train, travel to Liverpool, and go, do you know what? I'm not going to go to Liverpool. I'm going to get off of Conway Park and I'm going to do my shopping in Birkenhead. Now, that was a fantasy because nowhere on planet Earth, no matter how good Birkenhead is, are you going to stop there when you're on the train to Liverpool with all the facilities and leisure activities that you've got in Liverpool. And so they were going to spend large sums of money in Birkenhead to no outcome. And therein lies the problem, is that large swathes of government money have been bid for, and yet they don't know how to spend it. And of course, if you don't know how to spend it in a time frame, the government asks for it back. And therein lies the problem with Birkenhead. It's a shame, but that is the problem with Birkenhead. And the council is fixated on Birkenhead purely because that's where its voters are.
There's a lot wrong there. But the only thing I would say is that at both at council level, but also at national level, things are all going so well because not only is Wirral Borough Council messing up, but the Labour Party in charge of our country is messing up big style. And the sorts of things that are going on, particularly on the economic front just now, by the time we get to 2029 in the next election, there won't be anything left of them, I don't think.
No, I think we all had that view that the cabinet was made up of people who you couldn't have picked a more incompetent bunch of people. I mean, the Labour Party, I genuinely think, is incompetent by dint of its ideology. You have people there who have no background in ever having looked at a balance sheet, ever having created a job, ever run a business. These are people who are just ideologues, and they think that you can run business and run a country by, well, if you believe it often enough and you say it often enough, it must be true and it must happen. And of course, they're now realizing that after 14 years in opposition, when they could have got their ducks in a row, actually running a country is quite difficult. And I think you've got at the head of the beast, you have two Marxists in Rachel Reeves and a Marxist in charge of the Treasury. I mean, talk about, perverted. You've got Keir Starmer, who genuinely hates the people of this country. That I am convinced now he has a hatred of the British people because he is obsessed with anything that isn't British. The Chagos Islands he wants to give away. Fortunately, that was stopped this morning. So why would you give away something that belongs to you in the first place, and you're going to pay £90 million a year to a country that doesn't actually own it? I mean, you couldn't write that, could you, Ken?
Some of the decision making seems to be so bizarre that you almost wonder if there is some other agenda, that he's being blackmailed by somebody to try and hurt the British people.
I don't want to go down that road, Ken.
I'm not going down those that kind of conspiracy theory,
No.
but what I'm saying is that some of the decision making is so bizarre that you begin to entertain these thoughts.
Well, the trouble with Starmer is him and his, I think it's the Attorney General, Lord Harmer, as I call him, but it's Lord Hermer. They are obsessed with international law. They are absolutely committed to the ECHR, which judges in this country use perversely in order to
Well,
destroy.
that was the driver behind them giving back the Chagos Islands, that some international court somewhere had made a decision that they should do it. Now, this is not a court that has got any jurisdiction anywhere, but because it was an international court, they said, oh, well, we better do it then.
But that's because we as a country, particularly since 1997, have become obsessed with rule taking. You can see that by getting back into bed with the EU. Why would you go back into an organization that's sclerotic and is now dishing out orders, and you have to pay for those orders to be given to you? I mean, if you wrote that down for a Martian, they would go, "Sorry, are you mad?" But that is what we have. We have weak leadership in this country, but we also have pernicious leadership. And I believe Starmer is an enemy of the British people. I genuinely don't use that hyperbole without some gravitas behind it. This man is a danger to this country. And I've discussed it with other people. What normally happens these days is prime ministers see not what happens in the 4 or 5 years that they are the prime minister. What they're looking for is what happens when they're no longer the prime minister. So Tony Blair was very good at setting up lots of links with international companies so that when he was out of office, he could then become a multi-millionaire by giving speeches at £100,000 a go, by getting his foot in the door. I mean, this was the man who was the peace envoy for the Middle East, Tony Blair, a man who basically caused an illegal war
Yep,
in the Middle
millions of
East.
deaths.
You couldn't write it, could you, Ken? And so this is the, I mean, what we seem to have in this country is the political elite sticking two fingers up to the rest of us. If you don't like it, Ken, here's some more. If you don't like those ideas, here's some more that you can have. Because nobody in this country has any power anymore to do anything. The only power you have is at the ballot box every 5 years. And so, unfortunately, they know that.
And
And so, once they're in power,
up until now, you had no real alternative to vote for that could stop the pain, but now we
absolutely,
do, and
absolutely.
that's where we're going to be successful.
That is spot on, Ken. Finally, the British people have actually got something that they can latch on to, some hope. Because without reform, can you imagine if there wasn't a reform party? It's actually quite scary, isn't it?
Very scary.
And as I say, I'm not using hyperbole here. They are the only hope for this country. And that in itself terrifies me, that there's only one thing you can latch on to. But thank goodness it's the Reform Party and Nigel, because I know other people have called him messianic. I tend to view him as that, because he is the person
We
who is going to save us.
definitely, it's a messiah we need, isn't it?
Isn't it just? Isn't it just, Ken? And it's going to get hot. It is going to get hot, because the more and more people see that there'll be by-elections before the general election. There always are. There's probably going to be one in sort of Somerset, I think, where yet another Labour MP has done something naughty. That will be won by reform. And you can see as more and more things happen, by-elections happen all the time. They'll happen on the whittle as councillors. That terrifies the Labour and Conservative parties. And so they will do whatever they can to undermine us. So as long as we stay firm, we don't do something stupid and start supporting people that we shouldn't be supporting, I think we'll be fine up until the next election, because the British people, we're taking them with us. They
David,
really are with us.
that's been very good. Thank you very much indeed for coming on, and we'll get you on again soon, I hope. And I hope that's given people some insight into what life is like trying to form a branch of reform. Thanks again.
Thank you.